Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, July 15, Scottsdale, Arizona. Yes, we're back in the desert. And people say, why do you go to the desert in the summertime? Well, let me quickly answer that, because several people have wondered about my sanity when I say we're going to the desert in July. But we always do our annual physical with the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale. And it's much easier to get all the appointments you need in the summertime when the snowbirds are back in Canada and back in the Midwest and everywhere else. So that's why we head for the desert in the summertime. Hot, yes, it's hot, 102 to 108 degrees, but back in the Midwest in the wintertime, we have a furnace to heat our buildings, and here we have air conditioning to cool them down. Anyway, Max Armstrong will be coming along a little bit later to talk markets with Dale Dirkbolz, and the market continues to be an up-and-down event as far as the agricultural commodities are concerned. And then on the Wall Street side, didn't have the impact that Brexit had 3 weeks ago, but another incident, the one in France, and did have an impact on at least the travel industry today as we watched airline stocks and travel stocks suffer because of still yet another needless killing and everything else that happened in Nice, France. So as we look at what happened on this Friday, the Dow Industrials ended at a record high. Major indices closed a third consecutive week of gains. Upbeat economic data, the start of the earnings season, gave investors confidence maybe the current rally does have some legs. Consumer stocks today led the declines on the S&P 500, while the financial sector posted a less than 0.2% drop, even as Wells Fargo and Citigroup reported earnings that weren't quite up to snuff. But expectations for S&P earnings ticked up to a 4.7% decline. Earlier in the week, they were looking for a 5% drop in earnings for the S&P 500 companies during this week. And then adding to investor confidence today, we had retail sales going up more than expected in June. That bolsters views that economic growth is picking up in the second quarter. The Dow closed at a record high today. The S&P 500 posted 26 new 52-week highs and no new lows. The Dow, as we said, the S&P 500 intraday historic highs. The three major indices closed their third week of gains, a period in which the S&P now has advanced more than 6%. But then late in the day today, after reports of a military coup underway in Turkey, we did see some declines in the travel and leisure company shares, as I mentioned earlier. So the Dow Industrial Average for the day up 10 points, ending the day and the week 18,516. The S&P 500 lost 2 points today and ended the week at 2161, and the NASDAQ composite dropped 4.5 points to 5,029. But Alcoa kicked off the earnings report season back on Monday, and today banks had some impact because it was a week of heavy financial earnings reports. We started the week with J.P. Morgan Chase reporting a marginally lower second quarter profit, but still beat the analyst expectations. It's the biggest U.S. bank by assets, said its profit slipped 1% versus the same period a year ago. Then Citigroup reported today. Its earnings report beat Wall Street expectations with a smaller-than-expected drop in second-quarter profit as a rebound in trading activity partly offset the effects of persistently low U.S. interest rates. And the fourth largest U.S. bank by assets said earnings fell by 14% to $4 billion in the second quarter. That was far less than the 25% drop that was expected. And then the other bank that reported today, Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo, which is the biggest U.S. mortgage lender today, reported a 3.5% decline in quarterly profit. The bank said its net income in the second quarter fell to $5.2 billion. That's down from $5.4 billion a year earlier. Earnings per share slipped to $1.01 from $1.03 just a year ago. So the financial reports will continue, of course, next week as we get a full week of earnings reports going. The shares of European travel and leisure companies fell today because of the attack in the French city of Nice, killing more than 40 people. And so the French hotels operator, Accor, which is Europe's largest hotel group, down 3%. Shares in airlines such as Air France, EasyJet, and Thomas Cook anywhere from 1.6% to 4.2% lower. And here in the U.S., Priceline, Expedia, TripAdvisor down 1% to 2%. Delta, Southwest, and United Continental were down 1% to 2%. So that's what happened in a week that saw the record-setting time on Wall Street. And just 3 weeks ago, we were watching the markets fall apart because of Brexit. But now let's look ahead to next week and see who all will be reporting next week. On Monday, Bank of America, second largest U.S. bank by assets, will be reporting. IBM Corporation, the world's largest technology services company, expected to report a decline. Yahoo is expected to report a second quarter profit, but well below estimates. That will be coming up on Monday to start the week, along with Netflix. The video streaming service provider will be reporting on Monday, and Hasbro will be reporting its second quarter profit, and they're expecting that to come in a little bit above estimates because of the demand for toys based on Star Wars and Disney princess and Frozen dolls. But next week, really a slew of Dow 30 companies, including Goldman Sachs, Johnson & Johnson on Tuesday, American Express Company, United Health Group, Microsoft, General Motors, and Intel on Wednesday. The world's biggest payments network operator, Visa, will be reporting on Thursday, while General Electric will be releasing its second quarter results before the market opens on Friday. In addition to all of the earnings reports, the housing industry will take the spotlight next week. The Commerce Department will report on Tuesday housing starts, and expectations are that housing starts increase to a 1.17 million unit annualized rate in June. That would be up from 1.16 in May. Building permits are expected to come in at 1.16 million units in June. That would be up slightly from a 1.14 million unit pace the prior month. And a report from the National Association of Realtors on Thursday is expected to show existing home sales fell to an annual rate of 5,480,000 units. That would be down from 5,530,000 unit pace in May. Other reports due for release include the Philadelphia Federal Reserve Regional Manufacturing Survey on Thursday. Also on Thursday, the Conference Board is expected to report that its leading indicator rose 0.2% in June, and that would be reversing May's drop of 0.2%. General Motors, the world's the U.S. largest automaker and among the biggest three in the world, issues second quarter earnings on Thursday at a time when the company continues to report record profits but sees falling share values on Wall Street. And United Continental kicks off the airline earnings when it reports second quarter results on Tuesday. Doubt still lingering among investors about the airline's ability to sustain high profits. And despite attempts by the number three U.S. airline to catch up to rival Delta, analysts say United stock buybacks may slow down as it spends cash on generous labor deals and new aircraft and as passenger unit revenue continues to sink. Thursday, Alaska Air Group and Southwest Airlines expected to report higher revenue and profit. And then Friday, American Airlines Group, that's the number one U.S. airline by traffic, expected to report lower revenue and profit for the second quarter, hurt by the intense competition from low-cost rivals. Starbucks will be reporting, AT&T will be reporting, the number one weapons supplier to the Pentagon, Lockheed Martin, Halliburton, the number two oil field services company, will be reporting, and Chipotle Mexican Grill, that has been having its challenges, will also be reporting. It's going to be a busy week of analyzing for investors and analysts on Wall Street. Well, the agricultural commodity world is going up and down with different weather forecasts. We certainly saw that happen this week. And when we continue, Max Armstrong will be visiting with Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor to talk about that when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
And with weather forecasts changing for summer heat and moisture, Max Armstrong sat down in the studio this week and talked to Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor. And his first question?
Dale, I've often laughed about it. This is the time of the year that we really closely monitor sex in the cornfields. But truly, we are in the midst of pollination. Some have finished up. But how would you say pollination is going? How much of the crop is in the midst of pollination now? And what is your assessment of how well that is taking place?
You know, as a whole, pollination really is doing well so far at this point. In fact, over the weekend, I walked out behind my house and went, smells like corn, doesn't it? You know, you could smell it going on. I got a cornfield right behind my house. Conditions so far actually have been pretty good because temperatures haven't been real stressful. Moisture's been abundant. It's what's ahead that are going to cause some people some concern, and it could impact pollination to a degree, but it depends on how long it stays hot.
What do you mean, what's ahead? What is the assessment of the trading community on what that weather looks like now?
The Dome of Doom. That's what it's popularly called. You know, it's the, let's say a week and a half, 2 weeks out, the last part of July, everybody's been talking about, you know, we're going to get hot and we're going to get dry, especially in the Western Corn Belt and on into the Great Plains. That's significant, too, because as you look over the last number of years, the heart of the Corn Belt has moved west, and I'd say it's west of the Mississippi River, as we're speaking. So how hot it gets out there, and some of that planting was a little later, we could actually impact some pollination, you know. But the ultimate impact on corn, the question today is, how long does it continue?
We have somewhat significant amount of the corn crop that is already pollinated, right? I mean, some of it is finishing up pollination.
Yeah, I'd say we're probably, in terms of pollination, somewhere half beyond. You know, it really kind of varies to what part of the Midwest that you're in at this point. But I think probably half has already gotten through pollination or the bulk of it.
When will the entire crop be out of the woods? Now, I know, you know, you need good weather toward the tail end of the corn crop to finish off the yield. But basically, when will we be able to say this corn crop is made?
November.
When it's in the bin.
You got it. One of my thoughts this year, and it fits in with the weather, we go back to 2010. 2010, we had people looking at the crop condition ratings, and through that whole season, we had people go, you know, it's a good-looking crop, it's a good-looking crop, you know, and when it gets tall, you can't tell. But when farmers went to the field that year, they went out and got into the field and went, you know, it's not as good out in the middle of the field as it is on the edge. And if we're going to have some pollination issues, that's my fear, in that we mask what is really going on with the plant. So like what happened in 2010, we discovered through the series of USDA reports that really started in September that crop yield kept going down somewhat. Wasn't a bad crop, but the yield kept faltering, and it disappointed people.
And sometimes we see that happening. You talked about out in the center of the field because of the heat that builds out there, right? When we get into a hot period of time for that corn crop, quite often the heat is more intense out toward the center.
That is true. You know, the one thing that's going to tend to mitigate that a little bit at this point, though, is we do have good moisture out there at this point. And after the rains we've had here the last few days and what we'll have here the rest of the week, a lot of people are going to have good soil moisture out there. So you get that nighttime radiation cooling, which may keep it from staying real hot at night. That's the biggest problem you have with the corn.
Looking at some of the fields in central Illinois, in an area that you know very well, a few days ago, boy, it looked like a greenhouse. I mean, and I described it as I was driving down U.S. 136 in Champaign County, Illinois, as looking at a carpet. The crop was so even, the stand so superb, the fields so clean. It looks like a bin buster out there.
Ditto. You know, that's all you can say about it. You know, it is good. I've been up to Chicago about two, three times in the last few weeks. I've been to Indianapolis, and, you know, I've been out western Illinois a little bit, and you have to really get on into the far western parts of Illinois where there's been some water stress on the crop that you can see, and I'm talking lack of water. You know, it's been a little dry. And there are some places in the southeastern part of the state where you run into that as well, you know, but these are just pockets. And every year where you have a really good crop, you have places that are really, really, really good, and then you have places that are, yeah, they're a little bit below average. So I don't think we've got anything terribly unusual out there yet. But again, I say yet because to me it's, we're going to warm up here at the end of the month. How long does that stick with us? And so far, weather forecasters haven't delved beyond that two-week slot.
The condition ratings on corn and beans not only have not dropped, but in the most recent report, they actually improved ever so slightly. What's your gut feeling about this coming Monday's crop condition rating? Will we see it staying just about steady? Is that your feeling?
I don't see any reason for it to change after the weather we've had this last week. You know, it's still going to stay good. The thing that a lot of people need to understand about those condition ratings, though, that's an eyeball look at the crop. They are so subjective. But
the trade lives by those. I mean, they really, you know, become so pivotal on Monday afternoons.
They do live by those, and that bothers me an awful lot because I don't think a lot of people in the trade, especially those that really control big dollars, really understand how subjective those numbers are. There is very little scientific behind them. And I can show you when you look back at data, you know, that we have a lot of misses in the gaps in there according to what yield that those condition ratings imply and what actual yield ends up being.
Well, then let's look ahead toward the report that will be based on actual field surveys. When the August 12th report comes out from USDA, we should have a remarkably good handle on crop size, shouldn't we? I mean, especially compared to a year ago when there was so much late planting and so much that did not get planted.
It's a good benchmark to start from. The thing we have to understand about the August crop report, it's a population count. And it's plant population, and this year, because of where we are in the stage of development, we'll have good ear population counts, or at least reasonably good ear population counts to work with. They take that and they apply some kind of an estimate, usually a five-year average of ear weights back against those population numbers to come up to yield. But if, in fact, we're seeing possibly a little bit of pollination problem, if we stay warm and we shrink our period between pollination and black layer, you know, our kernels can end up a little bit shallow. In other words, you tend to be a little bit of a drag on ear weight. So that's something you really never know until you get into September and maybe even October.
Well, we've talked about the production side so much. Let's zero in a little bit on the demand. Soybean demand is still very robust, and it looks like it's going to hold up.
I don't see any reason not to think of, well, and even corn demand is going to hold up because we're going to find a good export program all the way in, probably into the early part of winter because of what happened down in Brazil. Soybeans, you have their crop that came back basically to last year's level. And so with that, we're going to find their export program start to wind down a little bit sooner. In fact, it already has, which means ours is going to stay robust. But offsetting this, we had a story this last week out of China. They were looking maybe at September imports 2.5 million ton. I mean, that's a real steep drop from where we are today at about 8 million ton per month. But that period there is not unusual to be low because that also is a transition in their imports coming out of South America to gearing up coming out of the U.S. So I don't know how to gauge that, but I think there's some little edge in here that's world demand may be softening just by a small fraction.
But do I follow you to say that we could probably go well into the winter without seeing the grain market just totally fall out of bed simply because of the shortfall of the 2016 South American production?
Oh, I think you're right on the mark on that. You know, I think we're in a big, broad, sideways pattern at this point in time. Unless weather comes into the mix, getting new highs in beans is going to be really tough. But on the flip side of that, you know, when we get into, let's say, harvest and we find beans flowing into the pipeline, you know, we could get down to, let's say, $10, but you don't see anything really significantly below that. So we're just going to be trading in a big, wide swinging range there. And the corn market probably doesn't have a downside risk to a great degree either. We're down at low levels. Yeah, we aren't going to find a big move to the upside unless weather does have an extended stressful period, but you really can't be wildly bearish either. Demand base is good for both.
Now tell me, can you get excited at all about wheat with a record per acre yield? Something like, what, 10 states had highest wheat yields ever? When did you ever see soft red wheat and hard red wheat both as good as we've seen in this year's production?
You know, that's a rarity. That really is. And, yeah, we're saddled with wheat not only here, but we're saddled with wheat around the world. Looks like we're going to have a good Russian crop, looks like we're going to have a good Ukrainian crop, a good Ukrainian corn crop too. European crop, EU crop's going to be off a little bit in here, and quality's going to be down this year. The big thing with wheat you got to keep an eye on is what we end up doing with wheat feed demand. That has to perk up. And you'll notice on the last S&D, they increased, I think, the world feeding number of wheat by somewhere around 8 million ton. We added 100 million bushel here into the U.S., and I think we can actually see those numbers both go up a little bit. So I think we finally found something near bottom as far as wheat's concerned. But wheat needs corn to carry it.
My, even the cotton market got lit up by the USDA.
Yeah, it did. I don't pay as much attention to cotton because I don't have a lot of cotton farmers in Illinois and Iowa. But, yeah, it really did. You know, I think there's reason, you know, when you look at cotton, you can see the production numbers after we had the big acreage number there, that things are finally starting to gel, demand's starting to find a base. But the big thing when you look across the sector of commodities, I think it's still money wants to own ag commodities at low prices. And I think that's one thing people are going to have to start to gear into and think about. We've had a lot of money flow into it since the first of the year. And right now, when you look across the spectrum of investment mediums, ag commodities and to a degree, commodities in general, to me, are still attractive because they're low price relative to other things.
But the stock indices have been hitting some records.
Yeah, they've been hitting records. But people, when you look at the stock market right now, we're up at new record highs. They're also questioning, how long can this game last? You know, and so you have to be doubtful here. And, you know, do you want to keep all your portfolio into the equities? And I think what's happening, people are diversifying out. And if you look at ratios between stock equities and commodity indices, you're seeing some signs here that commodities look like they're starting to gain ground versus equities.
And you get into the month of August, sometimes the stock market, those dog days of summer, gets to be slipping away just a little bit.
That's like walking out my back door in August, right? Yeah.
Back to cotton. There's one word that will inject a little bit of sobriety into that discussion about higher cotton prices, as we saw in the wake of the USDA report the other day. Polyester.
Yeah, it will, you know, and with energy prices down where they are, you know, polyester prices, and I don't follow that market at all, but polyester prices are going to do nothing but stay cheap. And so with poly encroaching on that, yeah, it does create some demand issues in the long haul for cotton. But as I'm quick to tell people, I tell you what, folks, I love an all-cotton shirt better than anything else.
But as Dustin Hoffman learned all those years ago, it's plastics. Boys and girls, ask your grandparents about yes. Dustin Hoffman and The Graduate.
Yeah, it's plastics when you look at it, but that's looking at it from an investment, too.
Great to talk to you, sir. Thanks, as always, for coming in. We enjoy it.
Good to see you.
Dale Durkos with AgriVisor.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The big news in the food industry, including producers and wholesalers and retailers, came with the passage of the National Food Labeling Act, because it looked like we were not going to get that done, and suddenly the people in the Senate came together, said, yes, we will approve. The president has said he will sign it. So that means we'll not have to be concerned about having 50 different states with 50 different food labeling laws in place, such as the one that Vermont put in place on the 1st of July. Pretty good vote in the House, so that the president said he would sign it, and so we'll wait for that to happen. Meanwhile, with some of the regulations that have taken place since the Dodd-Frank bill has gone through, or the Dodd-Frank Act, happened this week, and it involved a Chicagoan, Michael Kosha, the first person convicted of spoofing after it was made a crime under the Dodd-Frank Act, was sentenced to 3 years in prison by a federal judge in Chicago. And that was less than half the time that prosecutors wanted. Spoofing, which became illegal under the Dodd-Frank Act, carries a maximum of 10 years in prison. The practice, how does it work? Typically consists of systematically placing orders without intending to execute them, to trick the market into thinking there's interest in buying or selling that doesn't actually exist. Kosha is 54 years old. He was convicted by a jury last November of manipulating futures markets by placing unusually large orders that he did not intend to execute and then filling smaller trades on the opposite side. 3 years in prison ahead for Mr. Kosha. A report from the West on the values of farmland in the western part of the country indicated that farmland values have declined in the first half of this year. Quick look now at where the markets will start on Monday. Well, after today, the Chicago Board of Trade, September wheat will start at 424 and three quarters, dropped 8.5 cents today. September corn, 352 and a quarter, dropped 5.5 cents. August soybeans, 12.5 cents lower today, 1072 and a half. And November beans today dropped also down 6.25 cents. And in the livestock trade today, we saw a red screen there as well. So we're going to open at lower prices across the board on Monday. That's our time. Thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.